It also hasn't hurt that we haven't had to worry about money a single day in our lives. Mais oui, my marriage has survived even when it looked like my children wouldn't. That's part of what worries me about Seda, what she witnessed in my marriage. Come on, Vivi, Teensy said. You and Shep have stuck it out. We will never like you and Chick, Vivi said. But that's no revelation. They were interrupted by Chick, who stepped back out on the patio with fresh drinks. You know, Vivi said, you are an adorable waiter. How much do they pay you in this joint? He winked at her before stepping back inside. Vivi took a sip of her drink, letting the warmth of the bourbon settle into her body. God, is it a full moon or something? Who knows, Teensy asked, lighting them each another cigarette. There are some months when I could swear it's a full moon for 30 goddamn days, and we're supposed to be postmenopausal and serene. That's a joke. She handed Vivi a cigarette. In unison, they said, filthy habit. Then they each took a puff. I had the dream once when I was still sleeping in the same bedroom with Shep, Vivi said. She paused for a moment to see if it was all right with Teensy to continue. When Teensy nodded, Vivi proceeded. The one where Jack is smiling that long, slow grin of his. You know the one I mean. He's giving me that smile from the basketball court. He's turning and giving me that grin. I see his strong jawline and that hank of thick black hair. And I feel exactly the same way I did back then, the same warmth in my groin, the same heart pounding. I lower my head to toss my hair out of my eyes the way I used to do back when I still parted it on the side, and when I raise it again, Jack's jaw has been blown off. Same thing, every time. Vivi took a sip of her drink and stared out at the pool. She took a deep breath before continuing. Shep put his arms around me one night when I had the dream. He got up and mixed me a drink, brought it to me in bed. I was touched by Shep's concern, but I never told him why I was crying. Vivi frowned, then inhaled deeply from her cigarette, letting the smoke out slowly. Kids know everything. My daughter knows that I held back the core of myself from her father, from my husband of 40-some-odd years. She knows that my marriage wilted on the vine and just hung there. She witnessed me hold back the precious part of me that I buried when I was a teenager. Even when Sidda was not in the room, she saw. Vivi, you're being too hard on yourself, Teensy said. No, I'm not, Vivi said, firm. I have held on to your brother. That dream has torn me up hundreds of times in the past 5 decades. The only time it left me was when my babies were little. And I missed that dream, Teensy. I wanted it back. I begged that dream to return. And it did, with a roaring vengeance in 1963, when I dropped my basket. And part of me was thankful, because as much as that dream destroys me, it gives me back that part of my life. Teensy did not speak. She put down her drink and just listened. Vivi stubbed out her cigarette. What my thoroughly analyzed daughter doesn't understand is that you don't have to spend thousands of dollars in therapy to consider things like this. I think. I try to work it out. You don't have to pay someone $100 an hour. I like to think my rates are quite reasonable, Teensy said. Laughing, Vivi stood up and kissed her friend. I love you so much, Teens. Talk to Sidda, Teensy said. Oh, no, Vivi said. No, 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 not my style. This is my luggage. These are my trunks. She walked to the French doors as if looking for Chick. I carry these stories. They have my name tags on them. Shaking the ice in her glass, she said, Now, where is that darling little waiter? We could use some service in this establishment. Looking up at her, Teensy said, "Any baggage you have, bebe, cease to be only yours the minute that sperm hit that egg." Vivi turned away from Teensy so that she could see the water as it spurted out in a small arc from the breast of the mermaid statue. "Don't you miss her?" Teensy asked.
"I miss Sitta horribly. I think about her all the time."
"Then why in the world don't you call her, talk to her, listen to her? Try to answer her questions."
"I don't have any goddamn answers," Vivi said.
"Forget answers, then. Just tell her what happened. Try to mend this thing."
Teensy stared into her glass, took out a piece of ice, and plopped it in her mouth.
"Don't chew on that, Teensy. You'll ruin your teeth," Vivi said.
"I have been chewing on ice for 66 years, and I still have every single one of my own teeth," Teensy said, "which is more than I can say for some people."
With that, Teensy bit down on the ice and glared at Vivi.
"What?" Vivi said. "Why are you looking at me like that?"
"If you don't tell Sitta about the hospital that nobody called a hospital, then I will," Teensy said. "It's not pretty to lose your mother, at any age."
Vivi studied Teensy to see if she was serious.
"That was not the only time I left my children."
"I know," Teensy said gently.
Vivi closed her eyes for a moment, then looked at Teensy.
"Okay. It's in your hands. Do whatever you think is right."
"I have no idea what I think is right, ma petite chou," Teensy said. "I simply know that for me to do nothing would be a sin."
"Well, let's not get too Sarah Bernhardt about it," Vivi said, and reached out her hand to Teensy.
"No," Teensy agreed. "Let's not."
Affecting a mongrel European accent, Vivi swung back around to Teensy and asked,
"How much do I owe for today's session, Dr. Freud?"
"The name is Putwell," Teensy replied. "Dr. Pooty Putwell."
When Chick stepped onto the patio with a platter of filet mignon, and wearing an apron emblazoned with a crayfish that read, "Suck da heads," he found the two women in each other's arms, laughing and crying at the same time. He was unfazed. He had found them this way 84,000 times before. Chapter 24. The address on the envelope was barely legible, but Sitta recognized the hand immediately. It was the almost hieroglyphic handwriting of Willetta Lloyd, the black woman who had worked for Sitta's family for as long as she could remember. The envelope was so thin that the handwriting within was visible. The letter read,
"December 1st, 1957. Dear Miss Vivi Walker, while sitting down, I think of you and decide to write and thank you for the cashmere coat you done give me. It pretty and warm. I done let it out into sleeve and hem, and now it fit me fine. Chaney and me is fine, and send you our good wish and prayers, and hope all is fine with you and your family. Love, Mrs. Willetta T. Lloyd."
How different this letter was from the others Sitta had found tucked in the scrapbook. Written on cheap, lined paper, the page was ragged at the top, where it had been torn from a tablet. "God knows Willetta deserved whatever nice things my mother gave her," Sitta thought. "My mother's life, my own life, would not have been possible without Willetta. What we owe her is so complex, I'll never figure it out." Sitta contemplated the date the letter was written. What had prompted her mother to give Willetta a cashmere coat? She wondered if the long, soft, cream-colored coat she remembered Willetta wearing for years was indeed the one referred to in the thank-you note. Letter in hand, Sitta walked into the kitchen. Leaning against the counter, wondering if she should make a bite to eat, she half expected to smell that peculiarly Willetta scent, part Ajax, part Lipton tea.
She thought of the tall, stately black woman who had fed her, dressed her, hand-washed her delicates, played with her, sung to her, and listened to her with tenderness. She thought of the letters that still arrived from Willetta in that scrawling hand. She thought of how, each time they spoke on the phone, Willetta would say, "Oh, we misses you every day here, Pecan Grove." She remembered Willetta's 6-foot frame, her slightly Indian face, and she ached for this woman who had been a mother to her. Willetta had begun babysitting for the Walker children when Sitta was 3 years old, then became their full-time maid a few years after that. Maid, however, does not describe what Willetta was to Sitta. Forced by circumstance to spend more time caring for the Walker children than her own, Willetta loved Sitta in spite of the slave wages she was paid for her days and often her nights. Living just down the lane from the Walker home in a shotgun house with her husband Cheney and her own 2 daughters, Willetta had given Sitta an acceptance and affection that were miraculous, given the relationship she had to Sitta's parents. Of the countless cruelties of racism, Sitta thought, one is the unspoken rule that white children, once we reach a certain age, are supposed to renounce the passionate love we feel for the black women who raised us. We're supposed to replace it with a sentimental, patronizing affection. We're supposed to let the thinly veiled jealousy of our own mothers obscure what we feel for the women they hired as maids. Something about the cashmere coat disturbed Sitta. Once, years ago, Sitta had dreamed of seeing her mother standing in a doorway. In the dream, when Vivi unbuttoned the coat, she had been naked underneath, with gashes all over her body, as though she had fallen on a bed of knives. Sitta stood in the kitchen of the cabin and recalled the kinds of meals Willetta used to cook for them, stewed okra and tomatoes over rice, pork chops smothered in onions, hot biscuits dripping with butter and honey. She was suddenly seized with longing for a Willetta meal, something with tons of fat and cholesterol, something to see her through. Instead, Sitta grabbed an apple out of the wooden bowl on the counter. Then she stepped out on the deck into the warmth of a Pacific Northwest summer morning. She looked out at the tall fir trees that surrounded the cabin. She bit down into the apple. "I know nothing," she thought. She looked around at the tall fir trees that surrounded the cabin. "I know nothing but the smell of the sun hitting those countless needles from these old evergreens." Chapter 25. The next day, Vivi went wild cleaning out her closets. She made a thermos of coffee, went back in her dressing room, and started pulling clothes off their hangers. She set out a box for Willetta, a box for the Garnett Parish Women's Shelter, and a box for a sassy 20-something girl who lifted weights at the club with Vivi. That little girl would adore the outrageous things that wouldn't fit Willetta and would seem too frivolous for the women's shelter. Once she finished with her closets, Vivi climbed to the attic and started going through boxes and boxes of clothes that went as far back as the 50s. When she got to a box marked Chartreuse Moire Maternity Jacket, she had to stop and mix a drink. Carrying the box to the kitchen with her, Vivi put Judy Garland Live at the Palladium on the CD player. She mixed a drink, lit a cigarette, and opened the box to examine the jacket. It was one of the numbers she designed for herself when she was pregnant with Baylor, her last child. Cut like a painter's smock from a gorgeous piece of fabric with oversized rhinestone buttons, she'd worn it with matching earrings, black cigarette pants, and a kicky little gold velvet beret. She could only stand to look at the jacket for so long. Walking into the den with her drink, Vivi lay down on the window seat and stared out at the bayou. "It isn't easy to lose a mother." She propped a pillow under her knees and closed her eyes. That maternity jacket brought it all back. Vivi, 1957. I could not take it any longer. 17 straight days of rain in central Louisiana, November, damp to the bone cold. A week before Thanksgiving when the in-laws would come and scrape me to the bone. 4 babies who hardly stopped crying long enough to eat and shit. 4 of them. It would have been 5 if my twin baby boy had not died. I adored them, but I was sick to death of them. Beautiful children can also be cannibals. I longed for someone to swoop down and take them off my hands long enough for me to think one single thought without an interruption. Sitta, 4 years old, was still coughing from bronchitis and asking so many questions I wanted to slap her, because I did not have the time to talk, because there was Bayla, 3 months old, who still was not sleeping through the night, and little Shep, 3, who scooted around so fast I couldn't keep track of him. He toddled faster than grown-ups walk, could make it out the front door and out onto the driveway before I could wipe myself. Lulu Walker, 2, who ate constantly, always starving. If I heard her say, "Mama, I hungry," one more time, I would kill her. Shep was out at the duck camp all the time, with no goddamn telephone. If I asked the father of my children when he'd be back, all he said was, "I'll be back when I get back." I couldn't even make myself talk to the yaw-yaws about how sick I was of my 4 little monsters. I did not want even my best friends to know how fed up I was. I tried once to explain to Caro. "Tell Shep you want more time away," she said. That wasn't it. I could have a babysitter any time I wanted out, but it wasn't enough. It still left me the responsible one. For a while, I had Melinda, this big black baby nurse that the kids call Lindo. She came home from the hospital with me for every one of my babies. My children had gotten used to her. So had I. Melinda stayed for 3 months to nurse Bayla, and then she left me. She had to. She had another baby to take care of. I begged her to stay. I stood in the kitchen and said, "I need you, Melinda. Can't you just tell Mrs. Quinn to find another nurse? She can get somebody else." "I can't be doing that," she said. "I done nursed 2 Miss Quinn's babies, and she be counting on me. Already got my room fixed up. Miss Quinn fixed me up a nice room." "You mean I don't?" I said. "I know it's tiny. I'm sorry. I know it's not a real bedroom, but it's all we have in this place. I'll order a new bed if you want. Get new curtains. You just tell me what you want. I had no idea you didn't like your room here. Is it the bed? I mean, I know it's not a great bed." She just stood there in her big brown body, with that starched white uniform so clean and white you could smell the Clorox rising up off it. "It ain't that, Miss Vivi," she said. "I got me another baby coming I gotta look after. I can't be staying here. Done been here 3 months with this new baby Bayla, just like I done with all your other babies." The monsters were all asleep for once. It was quiet. I could hear that low hum of the refrigerator. I did not want to beg a colored person to help me, but I couldn't stop myself. "Melinda," I said, "I am begging you. Please don't leave me. I cannot take care of these 4 babies by myself. Please, please do not leave me. I will pay you anything you want. I will make Mr. Shep get you your own car. How about that?" I thought for a minute I had convinced her. Thought for a minute she would stay. After all I had done for her and her family, I thought she might at least stay and help me. "Miss Vivi," she said, "they you children, and you gonna have to tend them one of these days." I put my head in my hands and leaned down on the kitchen counter. That entire house smelled like baby formula. Baby formula was all I had smelled for the past 4 years. Baby formula, baby poo-poo, and baby throw-up. Melinda took out 3 bottles from the icebox. "Use the little saucepan to heat them," I said, "and go ahead and give Sitta a bottle. I know she's not supposed to have one, but she's quieter if she gets one with the others when they wake from their naps." "Yes, ma'am," Melinda said. My heart started skipping, and I could feel the fist in my stomach. My skin itched all over.
It was red from scratching. I had told myself that I would be ready for it, ready for Melinda to leave me with all four monsters. I handled two kids, didn't I? I handled three, didn't I? With another on the way, I handled it, didn't I? Miss Vivi, you be wanting me to warm you something up? You need to have you a bite. No, thank you, Melinda, I said. Maybe I'll have something later. I'll just have a Coke now. You done had you enough Coca-Cola, she said. You need you some food. I pulled the aluminum ashtray out of the freezer and ran water over it. Took out one of my squatty crystal glasses and filled it with Coke. Coke was my friend. It settled my stomach. It was the one thing that always stayed down no matter how upset my stomach was. I drank so many Cokes I had to hide the bottles from Shep and Mother. I didn't want to hear their comments. It was almost twilight, and still raining hard when I put the kids in the car and drove Melinda home. I pulled up in front of her house and left the car running. Two long-legged boys ran out to greet Melinda. They must have been 8 or 9 years old. I had no idea she had children that young. They could have been grandchildren for all I knew. You could never tell with colored people. Melinda, I said, won't you please change your mind? You could visit with your family and I could come back and get you later on tonight. No, Miss Vivi, she said, I can't go be letting people down. I got my work to be thinking of. What if I let you down when you be about to birth a new baby? I could not believe what I was hearing. I looked at that colored woman and I wanted to slap her. All right, Melinda, I said, I understand. God forbid I should interfere with your career. I handed Melinda my last 10 for a tip, and she climbed out, holding a folded newspaper over her head so she wouldn't get soaked. My dear, oh my dear, the little colored boys called out, hugging her, reaching to help her with a suitcase. That's when Sitta realized Melinda was leaving and started to bawl. Don't go, Lindo, she whined and tried to climb out of the car. You would have thought someone was torturing the child. You would have thought I was leaving, not some colored nurse. Shh, darling, I told Sitta, stay in the car. It's raining. Mama's going to buy you some new cutout dolls. But Sitta scrambled out of the back seat, and the next thing I knew, she and little Shep were both following Melinda out into the pouring rain. Oh, my God, there was not one but two filthy yard dogs standing on the edge of Melinda's porch. All I needed was for one of my babies to get bit by some rabies-infected colored dog. All I needed was for them to get even sicker with that damn bronchitis. Get back in this car, I hollered. Y'all get back here this instant. When Bayla, the baby, who was lying on the front seat next to me, heard me holler, he started howling, just after Melinda had finally gotten him quiet on the way out here. Only Lulu was behaving, sitting in the back, sucking down her third bottle since she'd woken up. Stay right where you are, Tallulah, I told her. Don't you move a muscle. Then I climbed out of the car and stepped down right into a puddle. There was not one goddamn sidewalk out here in Samtown, and there I was wearing my good brown suede flats. A bunch of coloreds were up on Melinda's porch, all dressed up like for a party. Whoa, Melinda, they called out, hooting and whistling. Get yourself in here, girl. We've been waiting on you, honey. We got fried chicken just jumping off the plate, waiting for your mouth. Child, Melinda said, and headed toward the porch, my two oldest children tagging right along behind her. I done got me a welcome home party. Well, you could tell from the tone of her voice that she had forgotten all about me and my children, like we did not exist. Melinda, I said, my hair dripping wet, would you be so kind as to help me get my little children back into the car and out of this pouring rain? Oh, yes'm, she said, and handed one of the colored boys her purse. Y'all go on up and wait on the porch, she told him. Medea be right behind you. It has always amazed me the way colored people call their mothers Medea, short for Mother Dear. I don't know where they get it. Melinda scooped both Sitta and Little Shep into her arms and brought them back to my car. Those two kids would not stop screaming. God, I was sick of their screaming.
Y'all be good children for your mama now, Melinda told them.
Then she wiped the mud off her dress where their feet touched her outfit.
Thank you, Miss Vivi,
she said, and slammed my car door.
Just slammed the door to my car and walked up to her house where all the lights were blazing and her family and friends were waiting to throw her a party. I got back in my car with my screaming children and my ruined shoes. I knew it didn't make a grain of sense, but my feelings were hurt. If Melinda was going to walk off and abandon me like that, then the least she could have done was to invite us in for a minute.
Mama, where are we going? Sitta asked from the back seat.
Mama, we get hamburgers, Little Shep said.
I do not know where he got it, but the child said hamburgers, like he grew up in Brooklyn or something. I lit a cigarette.
I don't know where we're going yet. Just sit there and be still.
Both Sitta and Little Shep still had bronchitis. They coughed so hard the whole body shook. Coughed so deep I couldn't bear the sound. I couldn't bear the look in their eyes when they coughed up mucus and almost choked on it.
Spit it out, I had to tell them. Don't swallow it, baby darlings. It'll make you sicker.
Well, they didn't understand.
They got that bronchial thing from Shep. I had never seen anyone cough that hard. Nobody ever did that kind of thing on my side of the family. I had listened to their coughs for weeks on end. Thank God for the cough syrup Dr. Poche had prescribed. It stopped the coughing and made them sleepy. The thing about Melinda was she knew just when to take Baylor. She knew just when he was about to drive me right over the edge. She would step into my bedroom where he was crying just when I was about to slap him. She would reach down and take him out of my arms like she was a fat black angel sent to me to stop me from harming my baby. She did that with all my babies. Sometimes I wondered how she knew, wondered if something in her huge body vibrated, so she picked it up like a radio station when I was this close to slapping my babies, just to get them to shut up. I did not like to spank. It was not something I wanted to do. It just happened before I knew it. I couldn't talk about it. Oh, Carol would joke in those days about driving off and forgetting one of her boys at a gas station and not remembering him until the next day. But she was kidding. I could not tell my friends about the things I did to my children when they pushed me too far. If things got too bad, Mother would send Ginger over and sometimes Ginger's granddaughter, Mary Lee, but she was just a girl herself. It wasn't enough. Nothing was enough. If Delia was still alive, she would see to it that I never had to call for help. When I finally got the kids home and in bed that night, I was so exhausted I was shaking. The son of a bitch, Shep. How could he have left me when he knew it was Melinda's last day? I could not sleep. I was too keyed up. I could feel the inside of my body vibrating. I could feel 12 million nerve endings. Niecy's kids had the measles. Carol was on a new kick of going to bed early. So I called Teensy, but she and Chick had already gone out.
Where did they go? I asked Shirley, who was babysitting.
To Mr. Chastain's dining room, she said.
I rang the restaurant and had them page Teensy. I need adults, I told her.
I'm flattered you think we qualify, Cher. We haven't ordered yet. Shall I get you some gumbo to start with?
Whatever, I said. I'm not very hungry. I hadn't had an appetite since Baylor was born. My stomach wouldn't settle down enough. Eating was a chore. I could have called Mother to babysit, but I didn't want to see that constipated look of blame on her face when she asked me why I couldn't just cook supper at home. So I called Willetta Lloyd, whose husband Cheney worked for Shep and his father on Pecan Grove, where we'd be moving when our new house was built, and we got out of that rat-trap rental house we were in back then. Willetta cleaned at Dr. Daggry's house at the time, but she babysat for me, what with the Daggry kids being almost grown. "Don't tell me no, Willetta," I said. "Please don't tell me no." I threw on a pair of camel wool slacks and a black sweater and reapplied my lipstick. I looked tubercular. My hair was getting thinner every day. I found hairs on my pillow when I woke up in the morning. After I drank my dinner at Chastain's, I could not bear to say goodnight. "Oh, don't be party poopers," I told Teensy and Chick. "Please don't call it a night yet. Let's drive over to the Theodore for an after-dinner drink." "Love to, Vivi, darling," Chick said, "but we've got to get home and see if our petit monstre have destroyed the house yet." "Teensy, can't you stay? I don't want to go home yet. Come play with me." "Vivi, baby," she said, "I am exhausted. My babies woke me up early this morning, and I didn't get my nap today. Rent check?" "Absolument," I said. Then I kissed them both good night. "Vivi," Chick said, "why aren't you tired? We've only got two kids. You've got four, for God's sake." "Not to mention the fact that Shep seems to think that he has none," Teensy said. "The Yaw-Yaws didn't like the way Shep left me for the duck camp. Niecy called me the duck widow." "I'm not in the least bit tired, really," I told them. "I could go all night."
"Give me whatever you got then," Chick said. "We could make a million if we bottle it."
The truth was, I was tired way underneath my skin. I was tired where even I couldn't see. I do not know how that happened, how I ended up like that. It all happened so fast. I loved the sound of Shep's voice. I loved the way the sun shone on the blonde hairs on his forearms. I thought, we will have beautiful children. He has good bones, good eyes. He's from an old family. I thought, he is not Jack, but I cannot have Jack. Shep brought me to see Pecan Grove. He drove me across the 800 acres in his convertible, showed me the spot where he wanted to build a house. I felt sexy with him. I felt something like love. I did not know what it would take to wake up every day and see Shep. He was not the man I wanted. He was not the man I truly loved. I adored actually being pregnant. I adored walking into a room with my latest PG outfits that I designed myself and had Mrs. Boyette tailor. But then there were these four creatures who depended on me. They wouldn't go away. You couldn't take them back because they kept getting bronchitis. I didn't mean for it all to happen. I didn't mean for it not to happen. I just drifted into the mother club, like a boat without a rudder. I did not know what motherhood would smell like. I did not know that being a mother meant I would lie awake and torture, the weight of responsibility biting into my skin. Was I doing it right? Was I giving my babies what they needed? Was I doing enough? Was I doing too much? Would I burn in hell if I did not put them before me in every goddamn thing I said and did? Did I have to be the Blessed Virgin Mary, the Holy Mother herself, rather than Vivi Abbott Walker? If I had known what I was getting into, I would have said no to all of it. Would have taken off running at the mere mention of babies. Willetta left when I got back from Chastain's. I gave her a tip for coming over at the last minute. She would not spend the night like I asked. These colored women were suddenly all saying no to me. Cheney came and got her. He came up to the door and brought her an extra sweater, and they turned around and walked down the sidewalk to the pickup truck with Pecan Grove written on the side. I had not slept more than 5 hours a night in over 4 years. I was a woman who used to sleep 10, 11 hours a night. Sleep was so sweet to me, I could taste it. I could taste a good nap, like a bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwich on fresh French bread. It was not only the rest I missed. I missed my dreams. God, I missed my dreams. Even the dark ones. Even the Jack dream. It had been so many years since I dreamed, always being uprooted to warm a bottle, lead a sleepy-eyed kid to the bathroom, and return to bed angry as hell, knowing I'd be exhausted the next day. On good nights, I used to dream of lying in a pool under a waterfall, and how my body could dip under the water and live without air, then pop up and begin to fly. I used to fly all over the place during those good, deep sleeps, and when I awoke, I would be smiling. With my kids and Shep, I couldn't do what I wanted. I wanted to run away with a stranger and be rich, rich, filthy rich. I wanted no responsibility. It's not that Shep was a bad man. He wasn't. We were building a big new house on a goddamn plantation. In the meantime, though, we lived in that ratty little rental of his father's. Six of us living in two bedrooms where I could not breathe. How was it that I came to hate Shirley Fry for winning the U.S. women's singles? I used to love winners. I used to be a winner. I used to play tennis. I mean, really play. I was so strong, my stomach so flat, my legs so tan, my hair so blonde. I mixed another drink, a stiff one. I watched the television sign off, cried at the Star-Spangled Banner, lit a ciggy in bed. I tried to read, but that last bourbon must have been stronger than I realized, hard to focus on the words. So I peeked in on the four of them again. God, they were beautiful. My children were perfect, each one of them more gorgeous than I could have ever imagined. I thank God for not giving me an ugly child. It's so much easier to love them when they're beautiful. I made good babies. Lulu snored like a father, but her eyes were bigger. Sitter, with those cherry-stained lips, perfect little lips, and red hair, any one of the yayas would have died for, not to mention those lashes. Little Shep, with his toy tractor that he insisted on taking to bed with him every night. Such a muscular little boy terror. Bela in his crib. I stared down at him, tufts of cotton top hair sprouting, little pea thumb in his mouth, puffy little breaths like he was blowing feathers. The nightlight was on, but I tiptoed over and turned on the closet light as well. If they woke up, I didn't want them to be afraid. I didn't ever want my children to be afraid. Back in my room, I closed my eyes and thought about Jack. Pictured his neck. Pictured him lifting me high into the air, the way he used to do, out of nowhere, just out of sheer joy. Pictured what our babies would have looked like. I must have drifted off. I was pulled back by somebody coughing. I waited for it to stop. Where was Melinda? Why wasn't she taking care of this? My body was heavy. I tried to lift my arm, but it would not move. I thought I'd gotten out of bed and slipped into my robe. More horrible coughing. Sitter, unable to clear the phlegm from her chest. I had to get up. I had to go to her. I thought I was on my feet. Thought it was Father coughing. I brought him hot lemon juice in his chair by the fire in the house on Compton Street. He did not see me. Father, I said, here, drink this. And then I woke with a start. My father was dead. He rounded the curve going too fast when Sitter was an infant, soon after I lost her twin, not long after we lost Genevieve. Sitter was standing next to my bed. Her hair was tangled. It was not hair like mine. She was not a true blonde. She could not stop coughing. I imagined I could see the inside of her body, could see her small ribs about to crack. I sat up in bed, pulled her to me, and circled my arms around her ribcage. Baby, I whispered. Try to hold on to just one long breath. It only made her cough harder.
It hurts, Mama, she said.
I reached for the glass on the nightstand. Darling, here, can you swallow just a little sip of water? I held the cup to her mouth, and she swallowed. Yeah, sweet baby, good, that's good. Swallow slowly, darling. That's it. She gagged and spit the liquid out of her mouth and started coughing worse. I took the glass from her hand and smelled it. It was not water. It was bourbon. If I had had a knife, I would have used it to cut my heart out. I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry all this is happening to you.
It's okay, Mama, she said. I came to tell you that Lulu and Baylor are sick.
What do you mean they're sick, darling? I asked her.
They made a lot of poo-poo.
When I stepped back into the children's room, I was slapped in the face by the smell of shit. It was pouring rain outside. All the windows were shut tight. Heat was blasting up through the floor furnace, and the whole room smelled like crap. Lulu was sitting up in her bed, sobbing. When I went to her, I could see she had diarrhea. It was dripping out of a diaper all over her legs and onto the covers. Somehow, it had even managed to get in her hair. I picked her up. Oh, baby. Shh, Lulu Cakes. It's okay. Her baby poo-poo rubbed onto my gown, against my arms. Baylor started crying when he heard the sound of my voice. I walked over to his crib, carrying Lulu, reached down to feel his diaper. It was full. The world was filled with baby crap. I thought it was all I would ever smell. Baylor, I said to my youngest baby, as if he could understand, I beg you, please, do not start up. He cranked it up, though, wailing at the top of his range. Then Sitter started that deep coughing again. I turned to look at her, and that is when Lulu threw up on me. Her baby puke soaked my gown. I could feel the wetness against my breasts. I could feel my whole body start to itch. I ran to the bathroom with Lulu, the overhead light so cruel and bright. As I bent down to position her over the toilet, I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror, and I did not know who it was. The wet washcloth was in my hand. What to wipe first, Lulu's face or bottom? When would I get to wipe my own soiled body? Then Sitter was in the doorway, her long red hair falling down over the shoulders of her nightgown. Her coughing racked her body, shook her shoulders. Is that all you can do is cough, I said. Stop that coughing this instant. Can't you see I've got my hands full? Go back into the bedroom and pick up your baby brother. I need some help around this house. My four-year-old daughter looked at me, covered her mouth with her hand, and then obeyed. When she returned, she had Baylor in her arms and little Shep by the hand. I wanted to kill them for putting me through this. Where was my husband? Where was the father of those four children? You show me where it is written that only mothers are supposed to smell crap. I could have shot him for leaving me alone like that. Sitter, wipe off the baby. Just take that washcloth and wet it and clean Baylor up. Holy Mary, Mother of God, where are your soiled gowns? Didn't the Son of God crap all over the place, the odor mingling with the animal smells in that manger? Why do you always look so goddamn sweet and serene? Sitter had Baylor in the bassinet, changing his diaper as best she could. When she started coughing again, little Shep said, Bad city, Mama say no cough. Lulu finally stopped throwing up, and I cracked open the bathroom window. Still pouring rain and freezing outside, but I could not take the stench any longer. The wind blew in on the five of us, on the little holy family, as we puked and shat and cried and coughed and slowly lost our minds. Finally, they were all clean. I had changed the shit and puke and snot-filled sheets and diapers and underwear and pajamas. I had flung the bedroom windows open and cranked the heat up to 90. Outside, it was still raining. Lulu, exhausted, had nodded off, her pudgy leg sticking out of the covers like it always did when she slept. I'd given little Shep, who was now wide awake, a box of animal crackers, and he sat in his bed playing with his tractor and biting the heads off giraffes. The baby was on his stomach, making little fretting noises. I rubbed his back in little circles. There, baby, be quiet. Please be quiet for Mama. Sitter's next coughing jag went on forever, making me close the windows, although I hated to. I crossed to her in a bed and looked at her. Why was her face pinched? She was only a child. Siddeley, darling, when did we last give you cough syrup? I don't know, Mama, she said, and started to cough again. I got the cough syrup out of the medicine cabinet in the bathroom and returned to her side. Sit up, darling, I told her. Here, let me prop up your pillow. I poured the amber liquid into a spoon. Here, sitter. Swallow slowly, okay? Her coughing momentarily stopped. I looked at the cough syrup and decided to pour myself a spoonful. It couldn't hurt. My hands were shaking. I pushed Sitter's hair out of her face. I placed my hands on her cheeks.
Feels good, Mama. You're my big girl, Sitter, I whispered. You're my oldest. You have to help me take care of the little ones. You promise? Yes, Mama, she whispered, her eyes starting to close.
Back in my bedroom, I lay down, my eyes wide open. It took me a while to realize that the stench now came from my own nightgown, which I hadn't yet changed. Without getting up, I slipped the gown off me and lay on the bed, naked. I looked down at my body and tried to pray. But the smell was too strong. I rose, walked to the closet. I took out my ankle-length off-white cashmere coat, a Givenchy that I bought for myself with part of my inheritance after Father died. The single most expensive, extravagant item I had ever bought for myself. I pulled on socks and boots and stepped out onto the small side porch. The rain was still falling, and an oyster-colored light was starting in the east. It was cold and damp, but at least it didn't stink. Holy Mother of the Redeemer, if only once I could see baby throw-up stains on your lovely blue garments. If only once I could see your own palms itching to slap the Savior in his bawling face, then maybe I would not now feel like such a piece of human crap. You goddamn eternal virgin, if you would wipe that insipid pastel smile off your face for one moment and look at me like we were in the same shoes, then I might not despair. I was no virgin. I stank. My hands smell like baby poop and puke and tobacco. Even the Hovet I sprinkled on them could not erase the stink. There was nothing to erase the stink of being alive. I was afraid my children would die. I was afraid we were all dying. In the dawn air, the cold turned my breath into fog. Fog was all around me. Soon I could not see my own hands. I made myself wait until 6:30 to call Willetta. I told her it was an emergency, and she came. While she made the kids breakfast, I put on lipstick and combed my hair. I was still trying not to cry. I went to the drawer in the bureau where Shep kept his cash. But there were only 2 fives. I needed more than that. Willetta, do you have any money? I asked. I was asking my colored babysitter for money.
No, ma'am. Just my bus money. What you need?
What I need is a lot of money, I told her.
You need you Mr. Robert B. Anthony off of TV to give you a check for $1 million is what you need, she told me while she gave Lulu a bottle with 7-Up in it for her upset stomach.
Make sure little Shep eats his oatmeal, I said. Otherwise, he'll be into the cookies before you can turn around.
Yes'm, she said, buttering Sitter a piece of toast. Where you going in all this rain?
I'm going to confession, I said. I'm going to get absolution.
Them old cat-eyed priests mean, Willetta muttered. You gotta look out for them old cat-eyed priests.
I'll be back in an hour or so, I said.
Good, Miss Vivi, she said, because I gotta get over to Mrs. Daggery as soon as you get back. She having her bridge party this evening.
They did not know me over at St. Anthony's. It was all Italian there. The church was darker and older than Divine Compassion, and they loved their artificial flowers, those Italians did. I had not been in that church since my childhood, when Mother took us there for the funeral of one of her friends. Underneath my Givenchy, I was wearing only my bra and panties. Who would have known the difference? It was not a sin. I had my chapel veil on. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. My last confession was 2 weeks ago. I tried to take a deep breath, but it got stuck in my chest. My heart slammed, and I could not breathe. I didn't know this priest. I couldn't confess at Our Lady of Divine Compassion. What I had to say was too goddamn much for my own parish. I could smell him sitting there on the other side of the screen. I leaned my nose in and smelled the screen. Scents of incense and leather-bound hymnals. The worn velvet of the kneeler scratched against my knees. I had no comfort. My whole body itched. Had been itching for 4.5 days. I itched all over. It would drive me crazy if it didn't stop. I had already gone through 2 bottles of calamine lotion, which had stained half my outfits, and it did no good. I called Dr. Beaupochet for something stronger, and he was supposed to have it waiting for me at Bordelon's. Thank God for Beau. He was a baby doctor, but he took care of me, too. I was 29 years old, almost 30. I could not breathe. My sins left me breathless. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been 2 weeks since my last good confession. I pulled my Givenchy coat tight around me. Father, I accuse myself of bad thoughts toward my family.
Were these thoughts impure?
No, Father.
Have you borne hatred toward your husband?
Yes, Father, and toward my children.
How many times have you borne these thoughts of hatred toward loved ones?
I don't know, Father. Too many times to count.
What are these bad thoughts?
I knew I had to tell him. He was a priest, the representative of God on earth. I had to tell my sins. Then maybe I could eat. Then maybe I could sleep. The palms of my hands itched. They itched right into the center of my skin. I pushed my thumbnail as hard as I could into my palm. I did not want to tell my innermost thoughts to this priest. I did not trust his cooked cabbage smell. But I needed absolution. I needed a prayer that would carry me back into that tiny house without murdering those 4 dear little children. In my thoughts, I whispered, I want to abandon my children. I want to injure my husband. I want to run away. I want to be unattached. I want to be famous.
Do you have the courage to make sacrifices?
Yes, Father.
Have you the necessary health and abilities to fulfill your duties as a wife and mother?
Yes, Father.
Well then, he said,
and shifted his weight in the chair.
The married state is a road which passes over hilly regions. You accepted a life of duty and responsibilities when you received the sacrament of matrimony. Precious lessons of patience and resignation may be learned from the lifelong sorrow of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of our Blessed Lord. Ask her to teach you how to bear your cross silently, patiently, and in perfect submission to the will of God. We are put on this earth to suffer. It is through suffering that you reach happiness, through humiliation that you attain glory. Your chief duty is to live together in love, concord, and fidelity with your husband, and to raise your children in the Catholic faith. You must banish these bad thoughts.
But, Father, I asked, what if I cannot make the thoughts stop?
Then you commit a sin of faithlessness in the passion of your Redeemer. For your penance, make a good act of contrition. Say 3 Our Fathers and 7 Hail Marys while slowly meditating each of the 7 sorrows of Mary. Now, by the power of God invested in me, I grant you absolution for your sins in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. Go in peace and sin no more.
I walked out of the church and got in my car. It smelled like my babies. I lit a cigarette. You must do penance in order to be forgiven. The car was cold. I pulled the Givenchy cashmere around me. I lit another cigarette. I stared at the velvet box that held the ring from my 16th birthday. Shep did not own that ring. I did. My father gave it to me. I could not get money unless Shep gave it to me. I could charge wherever I wanted, but Shep had to hand me money. I did not have a checking account. I had nothing of my own except that ring. $500. The man at the Lucky Pawn just handed over the money, did not want to hear where the ring came from.
"I don't want your story, lady," he said. "I just want your pawn item."
On the map, the Gulf of Mexico didn't look far. Still, it was farther than I had driven by myself in years. I drove fast, faster than that Ford had ever been driven. That old lady's sedan came with my second baby. I had nothing to do with picking it out. It appeared in the driveway with a note from Shep, and I was supposed to say thank you. Didn't my husband remember my Jeep? Didn't he remember I was the queen of the road, roaring through the night with the yah-yahs, my bare foot heavy on the pedal, my painted red toenails bright as the dials on the dash? Nobody knew where I was. Not even the yah-yahs. I would go somewhere and start a new life where no one knew me. I would have no roots. I would leave my husband, my children, my mother, that pissant priest, even my best friends behind. I would wipe the slate clean and stand naked and try to find out who was there. I would look for Vivi Abbott, a missing person. I didn't stop until I got to the Gulf of Mexico. I stood at the edge. All I could see was water stretching clear down to Mexico. The air was clear. I had left poo-poo diapers behind in Louisiana, nothing in front of me but water. It was blowing and lightly raining, but I craved a hurricane. I am a woman who loves hurricanes. They put me in a party mood, make me want to eat oysters on the half shell and act slutty. I leaned my body against the wind and walked. I was not the kind of woman to take off her coat and walk into that ocean, giving up. But the thought crossed my mind. I thought of that lovely, exquisite trip the yah-yahs and I took to this same gulf. Was it 42, 43? Drove all the way here by ourselves. No chaperone, no nothing. Jack and the gang drove down later. Stayed at Caro's family's beach house, woke up in the mornings, threw on our swimsuits, and headed straight for the beach. I thanked God that that beach was still there, that the water was still raging, that nothing was crying but seagulls. No baby puke, no mouths to feed. I walked for hours and did not miss my children for a moment. "Give me the best room you have," I told the desk clerk at the hotel of the Gulf Coast. Water view. Postcards in a little holder on the desk read, "An institution in keeping with the grandeur and beauty of the Mississippi Gulf Coast, in a tropical garden on the beach." I signed the register as Babe Diedrichson. The clerk only nodded. Fool, I should have signed Grace Kelly. "Have room service send up a bourbon and branch water, please. A double. Your best name brand." The first thing I did was draw a hot bath and climb into the tub with my drink. When I could no longer smell baby crap on my fingers, I got out. I dried my body with a plush white towel and applied the lotion. I pulled my Givenchy around me, put on fresh lipstick, headed downstairs, and tried not to scratch in public. The dining room looked out on the gulf. I sat down and unfolded the linen napkin in my lap. I ordered another bourbon and branch water and drank it quickly. I felt my shoulders relax. I ordered a third drink. When I finished it, I felt my stomach relax. But I still itched. I ordered a dozen oysters and ate them with cocktail sauce hot as hell with extra Tabasco sauce. I was nobody's mother. I was the queen of my own sovereign nation. A gentleman approached my table. He was graying at the temples, not hard to look at, but I didn't like his shoes, cheap and lacking originality.
"Excuse me," he said. "I can't help but notice you are alone this evening."
I looked at him square in the eyes and spoke with a British accent. "I am working on a story for the London Times."
"The London Times is writing a story about Gulf Shores?"
he asked, impressed. "Very confidential," I said. "Sorry."
"What a shame," the man said. "Pretty thing like you."
"Pretty is as pretty does," I said. The man went away. I polished off the oysters, then ate a salad, and ordered bread pudding for dessert. "We are known for it," the waiter said. "Lovely," I said. "And a snifter of brandy for a nightcap, if you'd be so kind." I sat at the table with plenty of room to breathe. Nothing tied on my waist. I should have dressed like that all the time. I should have shredded my girdles with a potato peeler. My belly was full and rounded, and I was very sleepy. My sobbing woke me. The smell and taste of bananas and peanut butter was in my mouth, a favorite snack on that summer trip to the coast. Niecy and Caro and Teensy and I sitting on the beach, eating bananas, smeared with peanut butter. The softness of the fruit, its sweetness, the nutty flavor of the peanut butter, the caramel color against the pale flesh of the bananas, the sun on my skin, my toes dug into the sand, the sound of our laughter, Jack's arrival, turning cartwheels, climbing up onto his shoulders, wading into the gulf. My body, agile, in constant motion, eating when I was hungry, sleeping when I was tired, being kissed when I wanted, never having to beg for anything. I flicked on the light in the room and lit a cigarette. When I opened the window, I could hear the gulf. Cold air hit my face. I put out my cigarette and walked into the bathroom. I took